Presence, we have Senator Elton, Senator Green, who I might add are always on time and care deeply about being thoughtful.
Hysterics.
We are going to reopen our discussions on Senate Bill 125. Doc, you want to come up?
Not by himself.
The voice from the phone.
I recognize your voice. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry.
All smart men surround themselves with competent women, right? As I remember, Doc, we had two amendments that were proposed last week and not adopted. And I believe that we have a committee substitute here that incorporates those. And if you'll explain them, what those were, and or what the changes are to the committee substitute, then I will ask the committee if they agree to adopt the committee substitute.
You mean move the committee substitute first? And then object?
Okay.
Okay, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 125. For discussion purposes, and we'll object for explanation.
And that's the backslash G?
Correct. Backslash G.
All right.
Chairman Dyson and the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be back again. Ms. Crayley from Department of Law is sitting here with me because some of the questions we anticipate will be more appropriately answered by her. The committee substitute that you have incorporates all of the changes we talked about last time in the amendments. And if you were just to refresh quickly what were in those amendments from the original bill, the most of these are renumbering amendments, and this committee substitute you have now in front of you incorporates that. On the substantive issue, one of them is on page 33 of the committee substitute. And is on lines 22 and 23. And if you remember, we talked about that this language includes a facility that performs invasive diagnostic or therapeutic services. I proposed that as language. We talked about it. And after more talking, I think that that should be withdrawn. It is language that is too broad. Would give doctors the impression that we're going to be regulating into doctors' offices. And none of us can figure out a way to narrow it in a way that would be appropriate, and so I would propose that just be withdrawn, and that if in future times there are other kinds of entities that we would propose should be licensed, we can come back to the legislature in the future to amend and add to the list of organizations or entities that should be licensed.
I apologize. I spaced out for a moment. Does the backslash G have what you want to go forward?
Backslash G was developed out of the amendments that we talked about last week, and so you'll need to make, or I'm going to recommend that you would take that out of.
That's what I heard peripherally. All right.
The other pertinent entity element of that is included. Let me think about this for a second. I think that, and then the only other pertinent part of the First Amendment we talked about last week was date. Remember, this draft of this bill was developed last fall, and it was envisioned that the bill would take effect this summer, so the background check and all of that activity would take effect this summer, and so the date has been changed to be effective for that part of the bill to be effective next spring or after the bill passes.
In 2006.
Right.
Okay.
2006.
Yeah, I see that. That's line 6, page 45.
Right. And then the other pertinent element was that we talked about last time was in response to the ASHNA comments about if the department takes over operation of an entity that the department licenses because of immediate risk to clients, that's a decision that should be taken with the commissioner's involvement. And so there's a paragraph that's been added to state that the department may not take action unless the commissioner has reasonable cause to believe that continued management by the entity would be injurious to the health, safety, or welfare of individuals receiving services from the entity.
Where's that?
Ask me that question, and I wasn't quite ready for that as to where that is on which page of this draft. If you can hold for a second, Virginia can find that for us, and I'll tell you what the other element was in this amendment. Yes, it's on page 29, line 20. Check. And then there was one other change that came out of that amendment, and that was a correction of an error, and that's in section 4732160 in the hearing section, and that would be on page what of this?
30 and 31.
Page 30 and 31, and that would be on line 30 on page 30, that it now ends AS 4464060 applies to the hearing period, and it removed the section that had previously said in the original bill as proposed that that section did not apply, and that was an error, and that's correcting that.
Yes. All right. So
those are the changes that are in the CS version.
All right. For the record, we've been joined by Senator Wilken, Senator Olson, and what we have done, gentlemen, is we have adopted and objected to a CS that incorporated amendments that were pending before us last week. Is the objection maintained?
No.
All right. And then I believe, sir, you had suggested an amendment on page 33.
Would you like me to move that amendment?
You want to describe it, Doc?
It would remove lines 22 and 23, and then there may be a numbering issue that legislative legal will clean up then after that.
I think there, yeah, there will. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that on page 33, lines 22 and 23, we delete the language and insert the instruction to renumber accordingly.
Is there objection? All right. None. Thank you. So we have before then as our working document, the backslash V as amended. I think you have laid it on a table here. Is this new information asking, answering some of the questions that came up?
Yeah, there,
go ahead.
Chairman Dyson, that is the document how an entry is made in the employee misconduct registry. Is that what you're holding?
When I was background checks, registries, and other databases.
Frequently asked questions, Chairman Dyson. Yes, these are questions that have come up as the questions about the registry and the background check have come up, and so this is a document that's been put together to try and answer the kinds of questions that we have been receiving and that legislators have asked.
Those are not our specific questions.
They're just all the questions we've gotten from various legislators on both the House and Senate side.
Right. So last week, last time we were together, I asked you about the state law on licensing abortion facilities, and in our previous discussion here, I believe you and your assistant told me that we have an attorney general's opinion that says that the state has no legal right to take any specific actions relationship to abortions that are performed by a licensed doctor if they're in the first trimester. Did I get it right?
Mr. Chairman, essentially, but I, the Attorney General's opinion basically states that the statutory provision that you referenced to, which I believe is 18-16-010, subparagraph A2, has been found to be unconstitutional with respect to first trimester abortions. So where it says that a hospital, that an abortion must be performed in a hospital or in an approved
right.
facility, it is unenforceable with respect to first trimester abortions. And the Attorney General opinion opines that, and that is still the opinion of the Attorney General's office based upon subsequent Alaska Supreme Court decisions.
So our Attorney General's office in the last 2 years has supports that earlier decision?
Well, it believes the decision is correct based upon subsequent Supreme Court decisions that have been issued by the Alaska Supreme Court.
All right.
In the late 80s and early 2000, late 90s and early 2000.
Okay. And I asked Doc and if indeed we had any way of verifying that those abortions that happened in those facilities were indeed first trimester. You know, does anybody, do the aborted fetuses have to go off to a lab to be examined? And the answer is no, it's self-reported. And I do not mean to imply that I have any information that anybody is not strictly following the law.
Senator Dyson, the only other comment I would make is, so far as we know, any other abortions that are being done in licensed facilities. We do license ambulatory surgery centers and for abortions, and we will be, as part of our licensing activities, continuing to look at that to make sure that is being done appropriately.
And I appreciate that. And is it fair to imply from that ambulatory surgery centers, my neighborhood, they call them doc in a box, but are not doing abortions unless they have been licensed by you specifically to do that?
The Senator Dyson, that's my belief, and we have no information to believe otherwise at this time.
All right. Nor do I. All right. Other questions for the department? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Dr. Mansinger, I had asked a question last time, and it was about how you define a person who has direct access to a client of a nursing home or long-term care facility.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Sorry.
Can you pull the mic closer or something? Thank you.
Dr. Mansinger, I had asked about other people who are often in licensed facilities that would have direct access to clients, and I used an example of a person with a therapy dog and wondered if, in fact, they would be required to be fingerprinted. I looked at the question 3 and answer 3, and I'm not sure that answers it. If they're there under supervision, they would not be required to be fingerprinted, but if they were there and not under direct supervision, they would be required to be fingerprinted?
Senator Elton, through the chair, my belief is that we should add one more word to this that should be in regulation, that the only volunteers that this should include would be those who have regular unsupervised direct access. Times when problems happen are usually when relationships have been allowed to develop. If somebody comes in as a volunteer, say from Kiwanis or sometimes at Christmas time, and brings in presents to give out, it doesn't have an opportunity to have a relationship, that doesn't seem to me to make sense that those volunteers would need to have background checks. However, if in a hospital, I'm a pediatrician in a nursery where a volunteer grandma comes in to rock babies on a regular basis and is there every week, that kind of a volunteer, I think, probably should have a background check.
That seems reasonable.
And with the way, if my name is here, in the way ever this is stated, you can make that distinction?
We can make that distinction in regs.
Senator,
we have an at ease, please.
Brief at ease.
At ease, so Spider and I are supposed to be in a meeting at 2:30.
Senator Green.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment number one to draft version G, which relates to a title change, and then an insert on page four, line one, concerning which more clearly clarifies what we were talking about the other day with regard to possession.
And for the benefit of everyone here, what it would allow then is somebody could have a firearm locked in the trunk of their car while they're in the parking lot at a child care facility. So you could pick up your kid on the way back from a hunting trip or going to one, or wouldn't be subject to a charge just because you always, as I always do, almost always do, is have a gun in the car. Joel? The question came up, is there any chance that that in any way jeopardizes any federal funding? I wouldn't think so. Okay. Okay, and this bill goes next to judiciary, and if this amendment is adopted, you know, please check that out, and we don't want you to lose money. We don't want Alaskans to go to jail for something most of us do. All right. Is there objection to the amendment?
If I just might say, just for the record, the amendment says an unloaded firearm. So it's important. Thank you.
Yep. And if, like in my pickup, there's no place to lock it, if it's enclosed in a closed container, you're home and free.
I'm just going to object because I think it's a rather important question to find out whether it implicates federal funding, and if it doesn't, it could be handled in judiciary.
All right. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Elton, I couldn't quite hear that objection. Can you tell me again so I could...
have to learn to speak up, Senator Olson.
Speak right in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to object to the adoption of the amendment because I think it's an important question that needs to be answered on whether or not it implicates federal funding. Prior to the adoption of the amendment, and I think the amendment could be offered in judiciary. So that's the basis for my objection.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, does it make any difference whether it does affect, does your feeling on the amendment make any difference whether it does affect federal funding?
Well, I am so keen about not losing rights and becoming a criminal for having a gun in your truck that I would be tempted to say, tell the federal government and all their money to take a screaming leap. But if it's a lot of money, you know,
billions,
you could argue that
billions.
My convictions at some point get negotiable.
You can be bought. You can be bought.
Not cheap. Realistic.
Not cheap. And if that turns out, I will personally encourage the Judiciary Committee to reconsider it.
On the other hand, you know, I don't want to be going to jail myself if I happen to be picking up somebody's kid to, right. And inadvertently have a firearm there.
Yeah. Sure. And I don't want you inadvertently in jail.
Sorry.
You deserve to go.
I'll
visit you.
I didn't say that.
All right. The objection is still maintained. Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Senator Green.
Yes.
No.
Senator Olson.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Amendments adopted. 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 All right. Any further discussion? Oh. How long do you think your guys' meeting?
Well, they changed it to 4:00. So we're just
okay.
Found
out. All right. We got a couple of people who want to testify today. Mr. Ford.
Senator Geisen.
Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, too. My name is Mike Ford, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska Native Health Board. We just wanted to get on the record and make a few comments about Senate Bill 125. Just in general, We appreciate the efforts of the department in this area. I mean, I think we'll lead to some efficiencies. We're hoping to continue to work with them through some of the complexities that the bill raises. I think you've seen in the testimony before the committee that there are a number of issues that really have yet to be resolved. But we feel confident that we can work with the department and resolve those issues as the bill passes through the process. There are two primary concerns that we have for the members of our board. We want to make sure that this bill does not diminish services we provide in the bush and doesn't disrupt services provided in the bush. And with those two overriding concerns in mind, we're going to continue to work with the department to make sure that that hopefully does not occur. And I understand time is short, so I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. It's my perception that this director is particularly sensitive to those issues and is pretty easy to work with.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mike? Appreciate all the help you've been to me in the past.
Thank you, sir.
Martha Anderson in Anchorage, can you hear us, Martha?
Yes, I do.
Please give us your testimony and tell us who do you represent?
Okay, Chairman Dyson and committee members, I'm Martha Anderson, and I'm the program manager for the child and adult care program for the municipality of Anchorage. And I want to share basically one issue today. We're concerned about Senate Bill 125, and we have the same concern about House Bill 193, and we urge that a subsection regarding delegation of authority be retained in the powers of the department section. We urge that the new statute 4732030 retain the existing language that allows municipalities to request the state to delegate municipalities the authority to license facilities. We also ask that the legislature retain the language that clarifies the process, which is the current practice and has been the practice since 1998, to clarify the delegation system. Specifically, we ask that the language be added in the subsection A, the 4732030, and it would read, which is the current language.
Just a second, Martha. Just a second. Martha?
Care facility under this chapter to a municipality that has adopted an ordinance providing for child care licensing under home rule powers.
No, it didn't.
And then the second section that we would like retained that's in the current statute, 4735010 subsection C, and we'd like that added in the new 4732030. Now it's a little longer paragraph, but the department shall within 90 days after receiving a written request that it do so, delegate powers relating to child care facilities under this chapter to a municipality that has adopted by ordinance providing for child care licensing under home rule powers under AS 29.10.010, or is authorized under AS 29.35.200-29.35.210, period. And then this part, a municipality to which these powers have been delegated may adopt by ordinance additional requirements for child care facilities operating within the country if the requirements meet or exceed requirements adopted by the department. That piece is very important. You don't want anything less. And then we're concerned that if the new licensing statute does not contain the language that authorizes the State Department to delegate licensing authority to a municipality, the department may not be authorized to delegate this authority like it's been in the past. In addition, if the department attempts to adopt regulations, which they currently are doing and they have it drafted, so if they attempt to adopt these regulations regarding delegation without retaining the statutory power in the Alaska statutes, 4735010, to delegate this authority, the department may be exceeding its powers granted in this draft. So our basic issue is that we really want the current language retained We were first delegated the full licensing responsibility for child care centers in 1989, and so we've been operating under the current system. And then in September of 2004, we were delegated the full authority to license child care homes. And so we've just completed this huge rewrite of our codes to match the state codes. We've just developed whole new systems, and we're fully responsible for licensing now approximately the same number of child care facilities that the entire rest of the state has, somewhere around 350, serving about 10,000 children. So that's our big issue. We want to retain the language. So in summary, Senate Bill 125, now pending before the state legislature, if passed in the current form, both the state and the Senate bills repeal AS 4735, in particular, AS 4735-010C, the provision providing for the State Department to delegate its powers relating to child care facilities under the chapter to a municipality that has adopted an ordinance providing for child care licensing under home rule powers. Both bills also delete the section, which is section 38 on page 17 of both bills. It omits the delegation language that spells out the process.
All right.
But we urge the language be included.
All right, hang on, Martha.
Okay.
Is there a companion bill in the House?
Yes, there is.
Okay, and
Bill 193.
All right. Off the record. Joel. All right. Off the record here, the department commissioner and the director have said that you're right. On the record. Anything else, Martha?
No, that's it. Oh, wait a minute. What? Oh, who in judiciary should I talk with?
The chairman and his staff. That's Senator Seekins.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. You did us good.
All right. I appreciate all right. Your work.
Any further discussion? Senator Elton.
Just a quick question if Dr. Mansour could come back up. Doctor, we had talked at a previous hearing about a concern that I had, and I wonder if you'd given it more thought, that the registry can be used as a hammer by an employer, a licensed facility, to get that employee to go quietly, and that employee's name would never show up on the registry because an agreement could be made between the employer and the employee. That, look, you go quietly, we'll forget about this, we're not going to take away your ability to work in your chosen field, but get out of here and do it now. I mean, have you given any thought to that concern and whether or not it can be addressed?
Senator Elton, through the chair, I've given it some thought. The one thing I think needs to be remembered is an employer will make a report, the state will investigate. If an employer says to an employee, you know, if you go quietly, then I won't report you, then I think that's what you're concerned about. The only leveling activity that I can think of is when we go in with our survey teams, if we find evidence that employees have been doing abuse or neglect or so on, and a provider hasn't reported, that then is going to be an employer problem with us as a state. I can't figure out how we could figure out if an employer uses this as a lever to get rid of an employee for some other reason, they could make a report, and if it hasn't dealt with abuse or neglect, we aren't going to put that person on the registry. So it's a hollow threat by the employer, but might they get away with it with an employee? I suppose that's possible. That they just don't like how somebody looks, and they say, we won't report you. I think it's going to be our job to make sure that organizations understand the limits of this registry. I would hope that we can figure out a way that employees would understand that they could, my employer could report me because of how I look, but that isn't going to do anything. It's not going to put me on the...
Mr. Chair, I'm not concerned about the second scenario, but perhaps it is addressed in this way. If in fact, a licensed facility or an employer fails to report, is a sanction available to you to yank their license?
Senator Elton, through the chair, that is correct, that this will be one of the responsibilities for a provider. If you get a license from the state, is you need to report concerns about abuse or neglect. It's our job then to investigate.
Senator Elton really raises a good point. And virtually all of us who have been paying attention both to elder abuse and child abuse, you know, when it finally gets to the point where there's a crime and it gets reported, you go back and find that that perpetrator had lost other jobs and or had been getting themselves into jobs where their target population was, you know, and boy, I'd encourage you as you communicate to the licensees out there to encourage them to be very professional for the sake of themselves and others, that bad apples don't get passed around, and remind them that ultimately you can sanction them for it.
Chairman Dyson, the comments I've heard from the organizations so far since this bill has been introduced have been all along that line, that we don't want to be hiring people that we shouldn't hire, and we it's our responsibility to report.
Yeah, I kind of interrupted. Did you have something else to say?
That's fine, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Any other?
I just want to say something. I think that the wrongful termination are booting them out the door for thing is just as much a cause for a complaint to Employment Opportunity Division of Labor and all the things that are enforced now as would any other kind of sort of closed door harassment, mistreatment, maltreatment, unfair treatment or advantage. And I think it would fall into that. And generally, the perpetrator who's the employer, who's the bad apple, this isn't the first time he's done it either. The pattern is established there as well. I think there are protections. We might not like to go after them or pursue them, you know, but I don't think anything ensures any employee of an always fair workplace. So, anyway.
Any other discussion? Questions? What's the wish of the committee?
I move, Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for Senate Bill number 125 as amended from Hess.
/G.
/G with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Objections? Seeing none, the bill is moved. We're adjourned. Thank you.